Welcome to Legend Lore with Luis and Lorne, where we talk about Pathfinder 2nd Edition.
I'm Luis, and I'm a developer at Paizo working on the Pathfinder's Lost Omens line. I've been playing tabletop RPGs for over 15 years, and I've written for dozens of Pathfinder products. I'm also the GM for Valiant, and I write the Monstrous Physique blog here on the No Direction Network.
And I am Lauren, your Dova Queen, and I've been playing RPGs for almost 20 years. I write the Bend the Knee blog here on No Direction, and you can also watch me play in the Adventurous, Stellar, and Three Ring Adventure podcasts. And this week, we're talking about Rarity.
Before we get started, we just want to say that although we know a lot about what we're talking about when it comes to Pathfinder, we want to remind you that we're not providing any kind of official answers. We're here to offer advice, and you can use that however you like. Remember that the official word from Paizo is the only official ruling out there, but don't forget, it's your game. Do what works best for your table.
Now, Walmart. Hear me out. Hear me out, Luis. Walmart is common in almost like every town. Like, you go anywhere, you can find a Walmart. But, sure. But, it's a little more uncommon to see, say, a Macy's, and even less common still, maybe even rare, if you will, to see an IKEA.
Yep.
Yeah. And there's one more rarity category, and to illustrate that one, I hear that Blockbuster still has one store left, and it's in Oregon. That's unique.
Yeah, I think you got it.
Welcome to Rarity, Luis.
That's it. That's the end of the episode. We covered it all.
Thanks for listening. If you like any of our fine... but what is Rarity in Pathfinder?
So Rarity, I mean, we use the word because it has a meaning that a lot of people understand. Rarity refers to how easily something is found, how often something can be found in the game, in the game setting. And the rarity system is kind of there to model things like the fact that there's only one Tarrasque, you know, there's only the one unique creature, but there are however many infinite number of owlbears and goblins and all these other common creatures out there. And it doesn't just apply to monsters, it applies to equipment, like different types of weapons. It applies to different types of spells, and a lot of just any option that's out there kind of can vary in rarity, and it depends on a number of factors. But yeah, in short, rarity tells you how often something can be found in the game and how easy it is to acquire it.
Can we talk about the infinite owlbears you mentioned?
Yeah.
I'm imagining all of the oceans are not water. They're just owlbears. And ships sail across the sea of owlbears.
There is definitely somewhere out there an infinite dimension of owlbears. And that's where all the owlbears come from. And if we ever run out, you can always just reach over into that dimension and pull out a couple more.
Now, one of the things that I love that we do on old 4L here is the Batman test. Now, obviously, you don't have, like, rare and uncommon kinds of Batman, but would you say that, like, the Batman villains could fit the rarity test?
Sure. Let's do the Batman test for rarity. The way I imagine applying rarity to Batman is the kind of stories that Batman will be part of. Batman all the time has to deal with the criminal element in Gotham City, and will take out things and will stop bank robbers and muggers and stuff like that on a regular basis. We'll say your everyday street level thug is common. And from there, what kind of stories is Batman part of? He probably runs into some of his rogues gallery all the time. He probably runs into the Joker all the time and the Penguin all the time. We'll say those guys are uncommon. You'll see Joker stories every so often, but you won't see them with every issue. And then from there are your rare villains that show up just every once in a while, and it's a very special thing, but it's not a story that hasn't happened before. We've seen Ra's al Ghul before, but he shows up every couple of years. He's not part of every big event or anything like that. Same with someone like Hush. And then there's what I consider the unique villains, the ones that are part of just big, dramatic, exciting things that happen once in a lifetime, or at least once, you know, every 10 years or so with crossover events. So you'll see villains like Darkseid or the Anti-Monitor show up, but only in these big, dramatic stories. Thinking about it, there might be uncommon Batman and rare Batman.
As I was saying it, I was thinking about that too, you know?
I remember growing up seeing lots of Batman toys. It's like, this is Arctic Batman and, you know, armored Batman and stuff like that. Those are uncommon Batman, I would say.
Well, I was thinking, you know, you have like dark and gritty, I'm Batman. That Batman, he's common, right? That Batman's common. But then you
common
have
now.
Yeah, but then you had what was the story where like it was Bruce Wayne that died, so his parents became the Batman and Joker, and you had Martha as Batman? Is that a unique or is that a rare Batman?
I would think that's a unique Batman. So that was when I think his father became Batman and his mom became the Joker.
His mom became the Joker. Yeah.
Alternate universe. Some other alternate universe that's uniquely distinct from the Owlbear universe.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and then you have like that Batman Beyond. That's like an uncommon Batman. Or that's even a rare Batman. Who knows?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, here we go. When Robin dons the mantle of Batman, that's uncommon.
That's
happened
an uncommon
a few times.
Batman.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
There we go.
All right. So that's Rarity in a nutshell. But what is Rarity in the rules? Rarity applies to equipment, magic items, spells, feats, and monsters. If you look at the stat block for the thing, and if it doesn't tell you the rarity, that's because it is common. And by default, everybody has access to every common option. Now, and when I'm saying this, I'm talking about the inner sea region of Galarian. On other parts of Galarian, that might change a little bit. But for your default Pathfinder inner sea Galarian game, common is common. And uncommons are things that characters might have to go a little bit out of their way to get. Like, say, maybe a little quest. Or, like, we have to go to this specific town because we want to buy the katanas that they have.
Uncommon options also have different ways to get at them via your class. There are uncommon options scattered all throughout the core rulebook that actually have a very easy way to get them, but it's very specific. So the only way to have the monk's key spells is to be a monk and take the feat that grants you something like Key Blast. It is an uncommon focus spell, but the monk has a very easy way to get it. Just take the one feat. But otherwise, no one else can get it.
Things that are rare are things that should definitely involve a lot of work to get your hands on. If you even can get your hands on it. Maybe like a really big quest. This is the kind of thing that you're gonna think, man, I really want to have that. So you go to your GM. You say, hey, GM, look, I don't ask for much. I've been a good player. I take notes. My backstory is good, but it's not front and center. You know, I've been amicable. Can I please do some research and figure out how I can get my hands on this rare sword? You know?
And it's something we've actually already started playing around with in the Inner Sea campaign setting, the Lost Age of Lost Omens setting, with our latest book, Lost Omens Legend. There are lots of items that are tied specifically to NPCs in the world. For example, there are specific technological items that are tied to one character, Kizmar Krukchar, who he knows how to make them. He's the only person that knows how to make them, but he can make you as many as he possibly can. But they're still rare because that's the only way to get at them. So if you want to get these new items, you have to go specifically visit Kizmar and get the stuff. But once you're there, you know, hey, he can make you as many as he's willing to make for you, assuming he doesn't dislike you and choose to run away or kill you or whatever.
Yeah, don't get on his nerves. And Kizmar is an example of the last rarity, unique, where there's only one of that thing. Anything where you could put the in front of its name is probably unique. The Starstone, the Batman, the Axe of the Dwarven Lords, right? And to get your hands on these items, I don't feel like one big quest is going to do it. I feel like one entire campaign might do it, you know? At the end of it, you can get your hands on one of these artifacts.
Yeah, or there might be an entire campaign centered around the artifact. You might have it, and that's the reason you have to go on a quest. I think the archetypical example of that is the One Ring that sets Frodo and Sam on to an enormous quest. He doesn't want it in the end. The whole quest is to get rid of it, but it's a unique item, and it has a whole story tied to it because of that.
I mean, you know, scimitars are a dime a dozen, but there's only one Icing Death. And these rarities, like, GMs are encouraged to fool around with these. So you can tweak them to kind of make your campaign feel the way you want to. Like, everything in the book is just the default for the Inner Sea. But if you're playing in, like, Rhapsody Canyon, then, like, you know, feel free to make Western things common. I just came up with Rhapsody Canyon, and I kind of like it. I kind of want to make, like, okay, here's what's common in Rhapsody Canyon.
Okay.
Bards and gunslingers.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else is uncommon.
All right. You can only sing songs about the prairie or shoot your gun.
Yep. I like it.
When fiddling around with rarity, if you want to make something more common or less common for your particular game, you want to keep in mind that at least the intent for the design team and with all Pathfinder options out there is that rarity doesn't denote the power that something has.
Can we say that a second time for the folks in the back?
Just because something is uncommon or rare or unique doesn't necessarily mean it's more powerful than anything else of its equivalent level.
This ain't magic cards.
Yeah. So a rare sword might have some properties like Flaming Rune and then a special rare thing that, I don't know, heals you when you take some fire damage. But it has all the other factors considered against things of its level. So if it's a level 15 rare flaming sword, it should be as strong as your common level 15 item. So you're free to mess with rarity as you like without any real concern that it's going to make your player characters more powerful or anything like that. Or they're not going to break the game because they suddenly have an uncommon or a rare item in their equipment.
Your concern is, and should be, does messing with the rarity in this way fit my narrative and make it more fun?
Yeah, there are specific options that have been made uncommon because they make it more difficult to tell particular types of stories. Back in 1E, we had the Speak with Dead spell, which made it really easy to find a murder victim and ask them, "Who killed you?" You can just get the answer out of them if they happen to see who killed them. But suddenly, in 2E, the Talking Dead spell, or the Talking Corpse spell, which is the equivalent of Speak with Dead, is uncommon because if you are running in an investigative game, a spell like that will suddenly just make things very trivial. It's not because it's necessarily powerful, it just kind of negates certain types of story. That's why divination and teleportation and a lot of those options that you're seeing among the spells are uncommon. Not because we think, oh no, you're going to ruin the game because suddenly you can get across the continent in a few days rather than a few weeks. No, we'd rather let your GM decide, hey, I want to tell a cool story where you travel across an entire continent, and keeping teleportation uncommon will make sure we can tell that story without kind of skipping past all of the interesting and exciting parts that we'd like to partake in. So they're there to roll back into common rarity if you're so inclined. But you just have to consider the implications that come with making something like that common.
Now, Luis, I read somewhere on Reddit about access in the Lost Omens line, but I'm really not that familiar with it. What can you tell me about access?
I can tell you quite a bit because I was there when access was born. So access was something that was added into the Lost Omens World Guide and subsequently has shown up in other places, including the rule books and stuff like that. But when you see an option, something like a feat or a spell or something like that, it might have an access line along with its prerequisites or things like that. Access is not at all something that you need to meet to take the option. So, for example, the Pathfinder Agent archetype in the World Guide mentions that the prerequisites are that you have to be a member of the Pathfinder Society, and it has an access line that says you are from Absalom. The agent dedication feat itself is uncommon. So there are three things going on here. First off, that feat is uncommon. That means that just you can't just willy-nilly take it on your own without at least some kind of permission. Sometimes that permission comes from your GM. You can ask, hey, can I be a Pathfinder agent? If your GM allows it, then you still have to meet the prerequisite of being a member of the Pathfinder Society. You can't just say you're a Pathfinder agent without being part of the Pathfinder Society. However, in this case, access kind of is your permission from your GM without actually having to get your GM's permission. This says, access, if you are from Absalom, suddenly you can take this feat as if it were common. You still have to be a member of the Pathfinder Society, but you don't have to go out and ask for permission because your story, your character's story, is such that it makes sense that they already have that connection to the Pathfinder Society and can take that feat. So there are things that show up all the time. Some might say for an access, you need to have a specific background. So if you have that background, you can take the uncommon or rare option as if it were common for you. Basically, what it boils down to, if you read an access line, if you meet that access line, whatever the access line is tied to suddenly becomes common for you specifically. It's still uncommon for everyone else, but you have the know-how, the connections, or just are generally tied to that option in such a way that you can take, your character can take it, but everyone else still has to deal with the rarity that comes with it.
Access gets your foot in the door.
Access is your foot in the door, yes.
Yeah, and if your foot's not already in the door, you can go out of your way to open it.
Yep. You can knock on the door by asking your GM or finding some other way to get through.
Now, another one of my favorite things we do around here at Legend Lore, in addition to the Batman test, is our builds. Almost every episode, we're able to find some way to demonstrate the way that we use these rules. And for rarity, I came up with an idea, Luis. I said, you know, in my home games, I run in my own world. I don't run in Galarian. And I've made different things have different levels of rarity that to kind of emphasize the story that I want to tell. And for me, what it is my players are running around in a collection of city-states called the Thian Empire. But each one is very independent, kind of like all the ancient Greek city-states. They all have their own laws, their own customs, their own cultures. And each one also has their own different rarities representative of that culture. For example, all of the Thine Empire, magic is illegal, like extremely illegal. In fact, in most cases, simply being accused of spellcraft finds one tied at the stake and burned. So what I've done is I've moved all of my spells up the rarity list by two spaces. A common spell, magic missile, that's now rare. Like, you're going to have a hard time finding any spells. And then spells that weren't common, they're now unique. There's, like, one dude who's holed up in, like, a pyramid somewhere who knows these things, right? So, but I've got this city, this region, this city-state called the Great Iodean Swamp, or we just call it the Black City Iode. And this is where suddenly these spells come back down by one space. So now common spells are only uncommon. Uncommon spells are only rare, because that's where the center of the black of the arcane black market is in Iode. And this is how I have changed my rarity system to tell a darker story of struggle and inquisition.
What does that do for classes like wizards and clerics and stuff? Is it tougher to be a cleric or a wizard?
If you tell me, if you come to my table and I tell you about this setting and I say, be warned, if you cast spells, people will probably report to their local inquisition and you might get burned to the stake. But you can play it if you want to. And I've never had anyone take me up on that. But if they did, I can imagine it would be harder for them. I would find a way, though. I would help them come up with something in their backstory that lets them start with some of these spells. Look, these spells are rare. You're not going to find them in the world. But you knew a guy from Iode. You might even be from the black markets in Iode. In fact, for this one, interestingly, the criminal background might make it easier to get spells. You don't see that every day.
Sounds like that character might have access to magic here and there.
I like that. But from what I understand, Luis, you've got something similar going on too. You've got a little world that you made up. Tell me about the rarities in that world.
Sure. So I too have fiddled with rarity. It is something I fiddled around with for Valiant, little show that, I guess if you're listening to this now, comes out in 2 days, so get excited for that. In Valiant, which is set in the world of Galarian, it's taking place in a different part of the world. It's not the Innersea region. It's in southwestern Arcadia, and things are really different for rarity there. Things like your typical medieval weapons, long swords and short swords, those are still common and stuff like that. But suddenly, you know what else is common?
Is it guns?
It's guns.
Yeah.
Mind you, not every gun is common, but at least where the adventure takes place in that little region, your typical pistol and blunderbuss and musket, those are common.
Luis, I don't ask for a lot, my man, but I want to ask for a favor.
Sure.
Can you please have the heroes go to Rhapsody Canyon?
I will do my best, yes.
Pretty please.
I will find a way to do that.
Yes.
As I mentioned, guns are common, or at least those specific guns are common, but there are still uncommon and rare guns. There are guns that shoot magical energy. So instead of having to load a bullet, you can just shoot a bolt of lightning out of it. But those are kind of more rare, so you can't just buy them willy-nilly. Those, I think, are in uncommon, rare? I don't remember what designation they ended up as.
Okay, so Macy's is uncommon, IKEA is rare.
Mm-hmm.
So is this a Macy's situation, go to the next town over to get one? Or is this like, you gotta like really drive?
I think it's more of a rare option then,
okay,
when we're thinking about it that way. But yeah, so that's really the only thing I fiddled with. It's suddenly there are guns, and some of these guns are common. But that even that little change can make a huge difference to play styles and just the feel of the setting. And I know it's something that we try to do with Galarian all over the place. For example, katanas are uncommon in the Innersea region, but if you go to Tian Sha, suddenly they are common. So just fiddling with that shows how you can make the world feel different. If spells are very uncommon or rare, it makes the world feel hugely different, but even just a difference of equipment can really tie into themes and the types of stories you might want to tell.
Mechanically, it's a small change, but conceptually or flavor-wise, it's huge. Now, speaking of something that is common but no less precious to us, we have questions from some of our listeners. From patron Dom, would you say it is reasonable in a home game to allow a character access to uncommon options because you think it jives well with their background. And, you know, for an example, letting a fighter who isn't in Last Wall learn the Everstand stance.
Sure. And the game already has some of that built into the rules with the access options. If your specific background or whatever you end up taking, it might give you access to some of these uncommon options. So that's an example you can use to at least base that in your particular games and how you can model that. But yeah, I think it's totally fine. A lot of the rarity things are very helpful when it comes to things like organized play and keep everyone on a level playing field. But for a home game, you are in charge and you will know best what works for your stories and for your particular group. I don't think the fact that your fighter suddenly can do Everstand stance and fight with their shield compared to the fact that, you know, normally you'd have to be a member of the Knights of Last One, all of that stuff, is gonna tear your game apart or ruin any of the immersion or stuff like that. It totally makes sense for characters to maybe have developed similar techniques that are represented by uncommon options. So yeah, I think it's totally reasonable to look into uncommon options for characters right out of the gate. I think consider the implications that come with those, like I mentioned earlier with the uncommon spells and how that might affect stories. And also try to be wary about that when it comes to rare options. Rare options, again, they're not going to ruin the game or anything, but there's a lot of story considerations that come with those. So if it makes sense, maybe the player characters all have a very specific copy of a rare item. Like there might be a rare weapon out there that they each had because they were all part of the same cool battalion from way long ago, and they have the only five in the world. That would be a pretty neat story, but maybe that's not the kind of story you want to tell.
I think I probably have a lot of practice taking things that are universe-specific or campaign-specific and kind of just scratching off all of those key features and names. Because I've almost always played in a homebrew campaign setting. Ever since I've been playing, it was just one of my buddies making up their world, and then it's my turn to make up my world. So especially for these uncommon options, I really think it'd be fine to just erase Last Wall from the archetype and just ask the player, why is it that you know something that is still uncommon? You can still make it uncommon. Not everybody fights with a shield. How did you learn this? Please justify it in literally any way, and then I will let you have it. That's how I would handle it. I'm pretty liberal with my players. I like to give them what they want. All I ask in return is you just give me some kind of words or something that tells me why it makes sense, because now we're talking story, and I like story.
And I think that ties kind of well into our next question here from user Brian Lane. Do you have any tips for players to negotiate with their GM to gain access to uncommon or rare options?
I will always argue that communication is how you get things done at the tabletop. Listeners who have also read the Dear Dova Queen advice column have probably heard about every other article being on communication. If you want something uncommon or rare from the game, this is what you say to the GM. You say, hey, I think this is pretty neat. What would you like to see me do to get my hands on that? That's all you do. And then they'll come up with it however you want. Now, when you're talking about negotiating with a GM, I'm assuming that you mean the GM's like, I'm not really comfortable with this. If they say just straight up no, well then, you know, you've got a different issue on your hands. This is somebody who doesn't want to work with your players. You can't play chess with a pigeon. That's a that's a reference to something, and I'm not going to say it on the air. If that's your GM, sorry. But if your GM says they're not comfortable with it, start coming up with options for them. Hey, I could go to this town and talk to the Arcane Academy, see if they can help me locate this rare collection of spells. You know, come up with some quest lines for them. Give your GM a bone. Just throw it over there. Just throw a bone to him.
Yeah, and another thing you can do, I think, to help allay any concerns your GM might have is just explain what you're wanting the option for or what you're planning to do with it. Because it's very easy to come up with a rare or an uncommon option and then have your GM feel like, oh, you're trying to cheat or break the game or, you know, get some really overpowered build. And that actually kind of applies to like third party options as well. This is kind of the same thought. If you say, hey, I want this because I think it would be a cool fit for my character once they hit level 10 for them to be able to do X, Y, and Z because of their backstory and blah, blah, blah. Great. I think being able to put that argument forth will help lower any concerns that might be out there. And having that communication, as Lauren said, a back and forth to, if the GM is saying no and doesn't offer an explanation, yeah, it would be nice to have an explanation. No, because I think it's going to come into conflict with some of the story later on once you're at higher levels. Okay, you know, as long as everyone has their justifications for why a yes or why a no, I think it'll be okay.
Interesting side note here real quick. Every time I have joined a game, I have pitched one particular character and have never been allowed to play it because no GM has ever said, yeah, that's fine, you can do that. I want a knight. Not like a noble knight. I get it. Like, knights have to be noble. Yeah, I get that. But I want somebody who grew up in the streets, you know, and who, like, kind of act chivalrous, even though, you know, they're not noble or anything. But the key thing here is that while they were on the streets, they stole a dragon egg, and they have an animal companion that's a dragon. I don't know. I just want to have it. I just want a dragon knight.
I bet you can convince Ryan to let you play a dragon knight sometime.
Yeah, and I've always had to use... You reminded me of this because you talked about third-party options. I've always had to pull up the third-party options to pitch it. Like, look, it's balanced. It's even made by this publisher. They make good stuff. It's balanced. Let me do it. They're all like, no, dragon would break the game. One day, I will get to play my Dragon Knight. One day. That day is not this day. From user Dustin, if you were running a home game, how would you limit these options at character creation? If you limit players to a number of uncommon or rare options at character creation, would you take into account future uncommon options that they might not yet qualify for, like an archetype?
So, trying to parse out a number of uncommon or rare options, you know, oh, there's only five options for each of you, you know, for each of your characters, feels like an arbitrary limitation. It can lead to in two different directions, either players being upset that they can't get as many of those options that they want, or players suddenly have to be like, well, I got to take advantage of all five of my uncommon slots, even though I only wanted one or two things. I don't think that's necessarily a fun game for that I would want to run. I think I will just let things sit as they are. You know, I would say, hey, this is the core assumptions based on the core rulebook, and maybe tweak one or two things like I did with Valiant. So it's like, okay, it's the normal core rules plus these guns are common. Or if I were doing a high seas adventure, it says, okay, it's all these rules plus these particular spells are common, right? Because they're water themed or whatever the case might be. And then from there, just ask my players if there are uncommon things you would like to see or have show up in the game, let me know and I will seed those in as I can. I've had spells show up in enemy wizard spell books, for example, but not necessarily be given out right away at character creation. I think it's more interesting to know what they want and then give them out as a surprise when they're least expecting it, because if... I don't know, I think it's just fun to have them as a reward more than just a list that you check off when you first create your character.
See, and I think I might be a little bit opposite here. I can't tell if I'm opposite or not on this. I'll tell you. I'll tell you what I think. I've got a controversial opinion about this, but I stand by it for my home games. I will never stand by it for everybody else, though. You do what's best for your game, but I don't like. I don't like when I'm trying to imagine the story in my head. Picture these characters and the struggles that they're going through. And one of them's a tiefling, one of them's a half dragon, one of them's a bugbear, one of them's a leshy. Like, I can't get behind this. Like, I can't picture it, you know? I can't relate to the characters in this story. Like, if you're watching a good movie, like, let's think of, like, a really, like, emotional movie. Let's see. I can't think of one. I don't know. Think of it. You can think of one. Just think of it. Imagine now that you replace all of those characters with just random races from the bestiary, right? I can't stand it. That would ruin the movie. Anyway, somewhere I'm getting at is you're talking, Dustin, you're talking about limiting options at character creations. I don't like to use the word limiting. I like to use the word guiding, you know? character creation, I don't tell my characters, you cannot play what you want to play. I don't do that. But I will tell them, hey, with the story that I'd like to tell, I would really prefer it if you all were dwarves or if you took dwarf-adjacent things. I'll do that. And then for uncommon and rare options, I think you kind of gave me a neat idea here, User Dustin. What if you told players, like, you have option, you have all the common options, but you can have one uncommon option, you know? Wouldn't that be neat? And if there's something that they don't qualify for now, but they want to, like, later, just, you know, make sure they know, like, yeah, we can look at that later, but make sure you're doing X, Y, and Z first, you know? Just talk about it. Anyway, that's how I feel about that.
Next question here from our patron, Litus. I know the rarity system allows me as a GM to limit parts of the game which may not fit the flavor of the campaign. If I wanted a game which restricted resurrection and divination abilities and spells, but all the other uncommon options were okay, how would I go about defining that for my players without having to list every resurrection and divination ability in the game?
Well, so if you were programming a computer, you would go in and you would, I'm not a coder, but I assume this is how it works. I don't know. I never saw the show. I assume that you would, like, have to type out each spell name and then, like, what it does in the system or something. But the human brain don't work like that. For your players, all you say is resurrection and divination abilities are one step more rare than they are in the core rulebook. If they're common, they're now uncommon. If they were uncommon, they're now rare. You just slap that on there like a coat of paint, and you're done. Good to go.
Yeah, I think the game has options to help you out here. The formatting of the game is such that it helps you out here. Every feat, every spell, everything has a variety of traits associated with it. So a spell might have the necromancy trait, and the mental trait, and the fear trait, and all that stuff for a fear spell, right? And you can just say, okay, any spells that have the divination trait are now uncommon. Anything that doesn't have the divination trait and was uncommon is now just common. And that's it, just a blanket change on that. I think you could, if this were programmed into a computer, it should be easy enough to, like, find all those traits, click a box or two to just switch the rarities around, and then you'd be done. So don't overthink it. If you explain to them that anything that looks like it's resurrection or divination is now uncommon, they can then come back to you later and say, hey, here's what this spell does. I don't know if it's uncommon or if it should be common. And then you can go on a case-by-case basis in that point. But just having that general judgment there will make it very easy for players to figure it out for themselves, I think.
Now, I think what's interesting about rarity is that it rhymes with and is related to scarcity. And it is time to make ourselves scarce, because that's all we have for you today. Make sure to check out the rest of our content on the No Direction Network. If you like this show or any of our other blogs or shows, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/NoDirection, because it's the support of our patrons that makes this all possible.
Sure is. Until next time, I'm Luis.
And I'm your Dova Queen. It's Lauren coming at you.
Thanks for listening to Legend Lore. And as always, it's been legendary.